Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 44 with Sam Bond.
We grabbed coffee and caught up and didn't really think anything of it at the time. He reached out to me a few weeks later and said, hey, you know, Lyft is starting a local team here in Atlanta. I've worked with a guy who is a friend of Lyft's co-founder, and he let me know the position was there. Would you like me to put you in touch? It was basically a lightning bolt that made me aware that this opportunity was even out there. I hadn't started a search. I just sort of, it appeared, and it appeared because I, you know, had maintained contacts and had folks that I was in touch across a variety of industries, and he just happened to think of me. So it was a great plug for the importance of building a network and maintaining contacts across a variety of industries and interests, because you never know what might fall into your lap.
The top three reasons to listen to today's episode are, number one, highlights. Sam has worked at three different companies that are often sought after by veterans: the consulting company Bain & Company, the consumer packaged goods company Coca-Cola, and the high-growth ride-sharing startup Lyft. He provides a great look at life within each of these and how he navigated his career transition between these three very different fields. Number two, networking. Sam is really approachable in his description of how he kept in touch with a diverse network of people in a way that was authentic and natural. This is how he ended up becoming the general manager of Lyft's Atlanta office. Number three, rocket ship. There are a few rocket ships in the Bay Area, and Lyft is certainly one of them. This company has been on a meteoric rise, and Sam has been part of their explosive trajectory. He shares more about what it's like to be on this wild ride. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find other episodes and resources to help you in your civilian career. You'll also find the show notes for this episode, including links to everything we discuss and timestamps to each topic we cover, just in case you'd like to jump around between topics, just like described in the hit 1992 song by House of Pain, Jump Around. So let's dive into my interview with Sam Bond. Well, joining me from Atlanta, my guest today is Samuel Bond. Sam, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks so much, Justin. Appreciate you having me.
So for our listeners, I wanted to give them an abbreviated background for you, Sam. So Sam is a general manager at Lyft. That's a company I'm sure every listener has used before. It's the app that makes it simple for people to find a ride whenever you need one. Although it's only 4 years old, Lyft has raised over $2 billion. That's right, $2 billion in funding, and they have nearly 6,000 employees listed on LinkedIn. Sam started out at Princeton University. He served as an officer in the Marine Corps for 4 years. And after his service, he attended the University of Virginia Darden Graduate School of Business. He then worked as a consultant at Bain & Company, first as a consultant, then a case team leader, and then he worked at Coca-Cola Company, first as a director of supply chain strategy, and then as a group director of strategy and portfolio management. So Sam, to maybe start things off, for someone listening who's on active duty, how would you explain what you do as a general manager at Lyft?
Sure. So the best way, I think, to explain what a general manager's roles and responsibilities look like would be to liken it to probably a company or a battalion commander of an infantry unit, or basically pick your commanding officer billet. It's my responsibility to deliver all of the business objectives for Lyft here in Atlanta, everything from growing our passenger base, helping deploy new products and lines of service, as well as helping grow our driver population, the folks that use their own car or cars that they rent or have access to on a short-term basis to provide rides on the Lyft platform. Also responsible to deliver customer service to those drivers and manage the team of associates that helps provide that customer service. So it's basically responsibility for the whole market in the same way that a CO would have responsibility for a whole unit or a whole part of a battle space or area of responsibility.
That's great. And without divulging anything confidential, like roughly how many reports or how many people do you end up overseeing then?
Sure, and no major secrets there. It's a Lyft Atlanta is still a relatively small team, although not nearly as small as we were when I started with the company back in January. At that time, I was the first full-time employee on the ground here, so a team of one. We have since grown to 12 plus full-time staff, and the majority of those are associates providing that driver customer service, but I also have individuals who help me with planning for operations and logistical support, as well as planning for local events and marketing activities.
That's awesome. You know, I always envision the general manager role as kind of like an ideal end state for a lot of veterans, where they're back in a leadership role, they have 100% accountability, they have just so much ownership. And what's cool is it sounds like not only are you in that position now, but you also had the benefit of starting an office and growing it. And I imagine that had a lot of pains and challenges hiring and building a team and starting from scratch, but that must have been exciting to really grow your own organization.
It really was. It's actually a really interesting, somewhat mirror image of one of my favorite experiences from my time in the Marine Corps. My second tour in the Marine Corps, I had the opportunity to lead a scout sniper platoon based in North Carolina. And the unit that I transferred into, that platoon had actually been more or less disbanded. There were very few folks that were held over from that unit. So I had an opportunity to recruit and train and build that platoon in the run-up to a deployment in 2007. And it was one of my favorite experiences of my time in the military. And there were some really interesting parallels between that experience and then having the opportunity to start from scratch here with Lyft Atlanta and build up a team in using some of the same general techniques in terms of recruiting, screening, assessing, looking at relative strengths and weaknesses and so forth. So it was a really neat complementary experience to something I'd done in the Corps.
And, you know, I know that no day is like a typical day. I imagine your days vary pretty widely, but I think it's helpful for listeners to get a sense of that, you know, as typical as it could be, day in the life, especially around the particulars of like what time you start working and the types of activities you do throughout the day.
Yeah, sure. And to be clear, you are spot on that there is, at least in this position, there has been no day that looks exactly like any other that's come before it, but there are some common themes. But sure. So one of the things that I typically do when I start a day, and you know, if I have been able to get a decent night's sleep and my kids haven't woken me up in the middle of the night, a lot of times I'll try and squeeze in an early morning workout. There are some Marine Corps habits that die hard. But we'll usually start my day around 8 or 8:30 here at our local office. And the first thing that I do is take a look at all the performance metrics and numbers from our business the day before. And what that helps me do is understand if there are any glaring issues or opportunities or potential items that need further exploration or explanation, either to higher headquarters, i.e. our home office, or to members of my team. And I typically spend, you know, a good 45 minutes to an hour reviewing all of that performance data and trying to get a sense for where our wins and losses were from the day before. Coming out of that, I'll typically do some form of alignment with my team. As I mentioned earlier, I have responsibility for both marketing, which in the rideshare world is kind of akin to, is really about passenger finding new people who want to ride Lyft and then kind of keeping them engaged with the Lyft platform. And so I'll have maybe a huddle with my marketing folks to understand what do we have coming up this week or this weekend? What events might we be sponsoring? Do we feel like we have enough clarity around things that are happening, marketing collateral, t-shirts, koozies, things that we're giving away, Do we have all of our online promotions set? And then doing a similar type huddle on the operations side. So I'll talk to my operations manager who's responsible for putting out communications to drivers through text or through email about those same events, about those same traffic conditions potentially that might impact their ability to give rides. And I usually like to budget some additional time to do those types of things in the morning as well. And if we're shorthanded or if something needs immediate attention, then I might have to jump in and help on any one of those work streams. And then depending on the day, I could spend some of my time in the afternoon coordinating with some of our support staff or support functions in San Francisco where Lyft is headquartered, or I might be out meeting with potential business partners, local leaders in the community, planning for, you know, joint promotional activity or planning sort of a campaign. We actually did a partnership with Atlanta's regional transit, MARTA, a couple months ago, where we provided a discount to riders to get to and from Atlanta's MARTA rail stations. And I spent a lot of time coordinating with that staff, both aligning on the terms of the partnership as well as making sure that we were all working together to pull it off successfully.
That's great. I mean, I imagine it's difficult to find one's way to a general manager role, but I think why it would be appealing to so many veterans is you have so much variety, and just even what you were explaining there, you've got the operations and you've got the strategy, you've got marketing, you've just got your hand in every single aspect of running an organization. And, you know, I guess one thing I would wonder is, what are some signs if someone's listening and what you just described sounds interesting, what are some indications that they might really like a role of general manager and be well suited for it? And what are some signs that it might not be the right fit for them?
Sure. So I think, in terms of identifying things that would indicate a fit, right? The positive indicators, I think if you had the opportunity to lead a small unit as part of your military experience, and you thrived in that environment where there was some uncertainty, and you were able to be flexible around potentially changing priorities or changing mission dynamics, and you thrived in that environment of being nimble, shifting priorities, shifting focus, but always keeping an eye on the overall goal, and also accepting, you know, one of my favorite Marine Corps euphemisms is the perfect plan violently executed, a perfect plan that's 10 minutes late is far worse than an okay plan that's violently executed.
I love it.
It's recognizing that sometimes, you know, being perfect and slow is suboptimal. And so I think that flexibility and that bias for action are certainly two key traits that would indicate fit with general management. I think on the flip side of the coin, there are certainly roles, responsibilities, and opportunities throughout corporate America where if you want to be an expert, if you really want to develop a deep expertise or specialty, and there are myriad opportunities to pursue careers with that type of focus, where the day-to-day is a little bit more well-defined, and the opportunity to really push the boundaries of the particular field, be it finance or accounting or operations, where the problem sets that you face are a little bit better defined, I guess, and the opportunity to, you know, have a little bit less variety. There are some folks that are really well suited to that, and you know, the general management role is typically a little bit more unpredictable. And I know and have great friends and colleagues from all different backgrounds who have chosen to focus on a particular craft or skill or specialty and derive great enjoyment from that.
That's great. And, you know, another reason I was really excited to speak with you is not only do you have such a cool and highly desirable role as general manager, but you're also just part of a rocket ship right now. And, you know, when I think of the companies that are most respected in Silicon Valley right now and had the highest growth, Lyft is definitely at the top of the list. And so I was wondering, you know, just learning more about what that's like of being part of an organization that is growing so rapidly. And in particular, if you have any thoughts on kind of the pros and cons of joining a company that's just on that exponential growth path.
Sure. And it's actually, I think it's an interesting contrast, and it probably helps draw some comparisons when I think of my experience at Lyft. Contrasted with my experience at Coca-Cola, phenomenal company with a rich history, an incredible leadership team and culture, but some very different dynamics. In terms of why Lyft and some thinking behind making that change, the environment at Lyft, and I think most startups, albeit Lyft, as you mentioned earlier, is a particularly well-funded one, but there is a sort of enthusiasm and just sort of a joy of being in what is generally more uncharted territory, both for the company overall and in many cases for the individuals on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I certainly can think back on my military career and reflect on the handful of leaders who I was inspired by, who were passionate about their role, passionate about serving the people that they led. And there was very much a feel like that within Lyft's culture. Our co-founders, John Zimmer and Logan Green, are really passionate about Lyft's mission to reconnect communities through better transportation. And it's really something that resonated with me personally. And when I saw an opportunity to help deliver against that mission here at home in Atlanta, it was really, you know, just too good to pass up. It was a change of pace. I mentioned earlier the general manager role having less predictability and having to thrive in an uncertain environment. My roles at Coca-Cola were on, you know, basically another end of a spectrum when it comes to predictability. Strategy work is very long-term in nature, and doing strategy coupled with portfolio management, which in the context of Coca-Cola and my role was about planning capital expenditures for Coca-Cola's manufacturing and distribution systems. So long-term capital projects, long-term strategy, and things that don't necessarily change dramatically day to day. And that was a great learning experience for me. It delivered a predictability around work-life balance, around my hours, around the problems that I was going to be solving that really fit at the time. But frankly, was something that I knew longer term, I wanted to try something different. And I think one of the biggest differences between a company like Lyft or a startup and an established role at an established company like a Coca-Cola is there are those trade-offs between predictability and knowing what's likely coming versus unpredictability and trying to stay nimble. I enjoyed both of them thoroughly, although I think it was as much a factor of where I was in my career development and in my personal life as the experiences themselves in a vacuum.
That's awesome. And, you know, I'm excited because I'll speak later on with Stephen Taylor, who's also a general manager and a veteran. And I'm always excited to learn about how you got to where you are right now. And so it'll be interesting to see two different routes to a similar spot. And so I thought maybe if we could rewind the clock to when you were in the Marine Corps. How did you approach that decision to transition? Like, how did you know you wanted to leave the Marine Corps, and how did you think about that?
Yeah, I think as a junior officer, and probably many folks listening have either gone through this or considering this, it's a very personal decision, and it's impacted by a wide variety of factors. Coming out of OCS and in my first year in the Marine Corps training pipeline, I would say I was probably 50-50 whether or not I wanted to do an extended career or a full 20-year career, or to maybe go 4 years and then leave active duty and potentially go back to school. And after coming out of the training pipeline and then doing my first tour, I was overseas with Regimental Combat Team 8 in Fallujah for the better part of a year in 2005. I knew at that point probably that for all the things that I loved and admired about the Marine Corps, that I probably didn't want to make a career out of it. And then as I transitioned billets and I had an opportunity to do a small unit command, I reflected on both the experiences within the Marine Corps and then what I thought I might want to do long term. And it was a recognition that as a junior officer, I had the privilege of working with incredible folks, having, you know, really incredible deployment opportunities, and doing two things that probably were top of my list in terms of the experiences that the Marine Corps can offer a junior officer. And on some level, it was the recognition that if everything works out okay after this second tour, walking away, having had a phenomenal 4-year run, and then being prepared for the next chapter, is a great place to go, to move on my own terms. And so, you know, I kind of made that decision about halfway through my second deployment, and then upon returning, made the decision to go back and pursue a graduate degree.
And in retrospect, if you were starting out again today, how essential do you think the MBA experience is if someone's aspiring to that role of general manager?
So I think it was very valuable for me. I would say that there's probably not a universal truth in terms of which one is better. Like so many things, it depends. But I had not held a true corporate job prior to the Marine Corps, and I was reflecting as I, you know, transitioned out of military service. I like the idea of going back to school. I'm married to an attorney. I have good friends who at that time had gone either to law school or business school. And I like the idea of going back into an academic environment and building some skills and some knowledge that I thought would make me more attractive in the workplace and better prepared to succeed. But I also know folks who made the transition out directly, either coming back and starting a new business or working without going back to school, jumping into corporate America. And I think there's both paths can be successful based on your risk tolerance and what you want to do. For me personally, the MBA was the right choice because I really needed to learn more and know more about the technical skills around marketing and finance and operations, and build up some of that quantitative skill that I hadn't had a chance to really develop as much in the Marine Corps. And it served me well both while getting my MBA and then going into my first recruiting process out of MBA and pursuing a job in consulting.
And what led you to Bain and Company? Did you, I'm curious kind of how you got there. And at the time, were you thinking that this would be a stepping stone? Were you thinking of career consulting? Or are you just kind of saying, I wanted to round out and just go from there?
Sure. The answer for how I approach consulting is slightly different from, you know, the maybe I'll do a career, maybe I won't when I was in the Marine Corps. Going into consulting, I was fairly confident that I didn't want to make a full career out of it. And the main reason there was I knew while I was at UVA getting my MBA, as well as in my first year or so of consulting, that I did want to eventually land a role that was more operational and more general manager focused. And the path to that for me, spending at least a couple of years in consulting was a great proving ground, both for myself as well as for potential hiring managers, for opportunities after consulting. And I was always viewing it as a stepping stone into something else. I was less clear when I started out how long I might want to stay in consulting. And in that first year or so, one of the things that I heard, a piece of feedback from a trusted friend, was essentially, if you are in a management consulting role, there's either the approach where you learn the skill set and the technical and quantitative skills that really constitute part of the core consulting value proposition, and then there's going for a career. And if you recognize early on that you don't want to do the latter, then make sure you stay long enough and enjoy your experiences so that you fully develop that consulting toolkit, because it's highly valuable across fields and opportunities once you transition into industry.
Yeah, I think that's such solid advice. And I'm wondering, especially where you're at right now, as you look back, what are some of the skills that you specifically learned at Bain that have really made your experience as a general manager richer and more effective?
I think one of the key things that the consulting experience helps one develop is what they call a nose for value, or sort of the ability to look at top level problems and potentially complex situations and fairly quickly get to a hypothesis around, what are the key drivers of this problem? And being able to look at something complicated and potentially very challenging and then distill it down to the two or three most important problems that need to be answered or solved, and then very quickly move from that identification into an action plan to either prove the questions out, or if you have identified the problem, put together the steps that'll help correct it. There are so many things in a general management role that you could do on any given day. I think having the consultant toolkit and being trained and having some experience in identifying, where the real key questions are and how to attack them is very, very valuable for being successful in a GM type role.
I love that too, because that skill set is so transferable, where you're learning to just quickly analyze and break down extremely complex problems into solvable things. And that could have served you well in any industry, in any functional role. So it seems like such a great complement to the academic component you had at Darden.
The practical application component is definitely one of the ways that consulting helps prepare, one to be a general manager. And one of the reasons why Bain was so attractive was that as a firm, Bain has a commitment to results. And there's a knock on sometimes on consulting generally that you develop these answers or these hypotheses, but then there's a gap. There's not always action taken against those plans. And, Bain's DNA was always about results and not just generating the report. And so that spoke to me, and that was kind of the key second ingredient to that skill set, was not just understanding what the problems are, but then having a bias for identifying plans and actions that are realistic and that can help solve the problem. And so that was definitely one of the appealing factors about Bain to me, and it certainly served me well in my time after Bain.
And you worked at Bain. You were a consultant for just over 2 years, and then you progressed to a case team leader for just over a year. How did the lifestyle change between those two roles? I'm just curious about any contrast between the type of work you were doing and then any contrast in terms of just that day-to-day life, if it got easier as case time leader, or if it was more hours, or I just was curious about how those two compared to each other.
Sure. I'd say the hours were fairly comparable, although I would say generally when you step into a role where you're leading a team, you, especially if you've got a military background and you have a bias for supporting the folks that you lead and you're responsible for, you tend to overinvest. And so that was certainly my experience in the case team leader role was, you know, I still had work that I was responsible for doing myself as an individual contributor, but then I was also responsible for coordinating and quality checking the efforts of junior members of the team. And, you know, that certainly, that was a experience that was more akin to most military leadership roles. But when it was layered on with the additional burden of also having to do, you know, also having to contribute on the analytical or the individual contributor side, it was really a more challenging type of role. And so it was a great one, and I challenged myself, and it was certainly a great testing ground. But it was a step change function in terms of responsibility, and a slight step up in terms of hours, and a step down in terms of flexibility.
And so at the end of those 3 years, like you said, you knew from the start you weren't going to make a career out of this. How did you end up at the Coca-Cola company? What was that process like?
Well, there's a lot of consultants that make their transition to industry whenever they decide to make that transition to a former client. And mine was a situation where I had done work at Coca-Cola with a variety of folks during my time at Bain. And when I made the decision to transition out of consulting, I certainly reconnected with a lot of the, you know, trusted and looked up to clients that I had worked with to see if there were any opportunities. And so I cast a bit of a wide net coming out of Bain just to kind of see what all was out there. And certainly Coca-Cola was on that list. And actually, when I started my search, there actually wasn't anything available that was really a good fit at Coca-Cola, but by virtue of making contact with a few people and maintaining that contact while I was doing my diligence, something eventually presented itself and seemed like a great fit. So it was a longer process, and there was a lot more of the personal side, networking and sort of doing my own diligence about what types of challenges I wanted to tackle and what kind of opportunities would make sense.
It seems like it's another great advantage of consulting is not only the skill set like you talked about, but then the exposure to these great companies and the network that you build up. And I imagine that bled off some of the pressure when you were looking for your next job of just making it a little bit smoother of a transition.
It certainly did. There were a lot of folks that I'd worked very closely with on 2-, 4-, 6-month engagements, many of whom were headquartered either in Atlanta or had offices or operations in and around town. And that was the other thing. I knew that at that time, it helped simplify my search for life after Bain, if you will, that I really wanted to stay in Atlanta. At the time, my daughter was, turning 3, and we knew that we had a second child on the way. And so I knew that I wanted to stay put. We developed, ties to the community and good friends and neighbors. And so I knew I wanted to stay put. And so that helped simplify the search a little bit. And I also knew that I wanted to take sort of a longer view of opportunities after consulting And it was with that in mind that there was this really neat strategy opportunity at Coca-Cola that just seemed to make a lot of sense.
And while you were at Coca-Cola, you were the director of supply chain strategy and then group director of strategy and portfolio management. How would you explain those roles to a veteran who's listening? Like, what did that translate to in terms of the type of work you were doing?
So the first role that I was in, director of supply chain strategy, was a more typical strategy role with a focus on Coca-Cola's physical infrastructure and distribution. So think about your logistics and transportation sections of a unit. You got to get men, women, and material from A to B to C, maintain lines of communication, maintain lines of supply. And a consumer packaged goods supply chain like Coca-Cola has in North America operates on those same principles. And the strategy role would be probably most akin to some combination of intelligence and operations or future operations, campaign planning. It's all about, you know, over the next 6 months, 12 months, 3 years, where are we going? What capabilities do we need to develop? And how are we going to invest in both programs and people and technology to deliver those capabilities? And so that was more of the director of supply chain strategy role, was helping develop those plans, helping make sure that they tied to Coca-Cola North America's long-term business objectives. The second role was candidly a little bit of a combination of the first role and then an extension of responsibility into capital planning, which was really about where to invest the actual dollars to deliver the strategy. And so the portfolio management was this analogy might be a little bit more of a stretch, but it's kind of a hybrid of maybe like a Pentagon budgeting team, and kind of understanding there's a limited amount of funds, or well, maybe there is a limited amount to deploy to different programs and branches. And I was involved in leading the team that looked at the overall budget, made sure that proposals for new manufacturing facilities or new equipment justified the capital or the dollars that we would have to spend to acquire them. And it was kind of an interesting mix of both that strategy, which is by its nature a little bit theoretical, and the execution of that strategy by investing in new plant and technology. And so that's how I would describe the second role. It is a little bit more of a unique role because it was resulted from the combination of two previously distinct teams under one leader.
That's great. And you know, one thing I'm realizing too as you're saying this is that you know, being the first person on the show who's worked at the Coca-Cola company, if someone was listening right now and maybe they're on active duty and about to transition or maybe newly transitioned, and they know Coca-Cola, they respect them as a company, what sort of roles at Coca-Cola might they be qualified for as an entry role? Or is it necessary for them to first get some other experience or some sort of educational process before they would apply?
Sure. There are the thing about a company that is as big and has as much of a history as Coca-Cola is you can probably find a role across any type of capability or capacity anywhere in corporate America. And by and large, there is a section or a team at Coca-Cola that does that. And that's everything from small unit leadership or transportation specialties, like, you know, whether it's, you know, driving trucks, coordinating and leading warehouses, planning different logistical shifts and routing of goods and people, all the way up to, at the higher levels, you've got, you know, financial and analytical support roles. So there's this wide variety. And I think, you know, as far as opportunities in a company like Coca-Cola that has, you know, hundreds of physical facilities across the U.S., there's always a hunger for qualified leaders, even if it's sort of junior level leaders, who have like the credibility associated with having served in the military, to do on-site supervision leadership roles in warehousing, in manufacturing. That being said, there are often sort of experience or educational requirements to go with the other types of positions. So it really depends on folks that are transitioning, if it's officers or they already have an undergraduate or even a master's of some kind. There are certain types of opportunities that present themselves, but even if there are not, there are lower level positions, particularly in the field or in the distributed locations that Coca-Cola has across the country, that might also be an option. So it's a wide variety, I guess I would say.
That's great. That's very helpful. And so after about just shy of 2.5 years at Coca-Cola, what led you to Lyft?
And this is actually probably one of the most, I think, important things to convey to the military community transitioning to civilian life and looking for jobs in the corporate sector. There is a huge bias for the personal and personal relationships when it comes to, all opportunities, but particularly opportunities in small or fast-growing industries. I had, when I was leaving Bain, reached out to a variety of folks to understand, you know, as I mentioned, I reached out to my former clients at Coca-Cola, reached out to a whole bunch of friends and former consultants, frankly, who had transitioned in other opportunities, just to explore what was out there. And the process of networking really was, I enjoyed it. I learned a lot about different local firms and where there were opportunities and some of the shared challenges or risks associated with going to a smaller company. But I kept in touch with all of those folks, and I maintained, you know, even though I was very happy in my role at Coca-Cola and I thought there was great opportunity there, I tried to make a point to regularly get back in touch with former colleagues and, you know, over a cup of coffee or over breakfast or over a beer, just to kind of see what they're up to. And it was after a meeting like that, with a former Bain colleague who had left Bain to go into a startup, here in Atlanta. And that colleague, we grabbed coffee and caught up and, didn't really think anything of it at the time. He reached out to me a few weeks later and said, "Hey, you know, Lyft is starting a local team here in Atlanta. I've worked with a guy who is a friend of Lyft's co-founder, and he let me know the position was there. Would you like me to put you in touch?" So it was basically a lightning bolt that made me aware that this opportunity was even out there. I hadn't started a search. I just it appeared because I, you know, had maintained contacts and had folks that I was in touch across a variety of industries, and he just happened to think of me. So it was a great plug for the importance of building a network and maintaining contacts across a variety of industries and interests, because you never know what might fall into your lap.
There's so many things I love about that, but it's kind of that combination of consistent work and dedication and then serendipity. But like you needed to continuously be keeping that network alive in order to have that fortuitous moment of one of these things working out. And I love it even more because, like you said, you grabbed coffee. You were just catching up. It wasn't like you were expecting anything from it. It's. I feel like networking is such a loaded word with so many veterans, but it's, you know, you're basically grabbing coffee and catching up on life and work with someone. And you were doing that across the board. And like you said, you enjoyed it. And it did pay off in a major way for you in terms of your career, but it doesn't sound like that was the sole motivation behind this.
No, it wasn't the sole motivation at all. And I certainly, as I think many transitioning veterans feel, it's hard when you have grown up in and been molded by a culture that, particularly as an officer or an NCO or staff NCO, you know, and the Marine Corps, certainly the focus is on is on the folks you lead, and your successes are their successes and your failures are your failures. And I think that has a tendency to make military veterans who are in the workplace or looking for jobs to, in many cases, be a little bit too, I wouldn't say shy, but reluctant to self-promote. And there's a balance, and it's something that is frankly every person has to calibrate on their own, how much they're willing to, you know, remind a colleague or a friend, you know, about the work they've done in a similar project in case someone's looking for something down the road, versus, you know, doing it a little bit over the top or being too aggressive with it. But I have seen across a variety of experiences where, you know, veterans probably just by virtue of that experience and that culture that's been built, maybe aren't as natural when it comes to networking or self-promotion. And it's a habit that you need to break, albeit slowly, and making sure not to over-rotate to something, you know, a little bit far afield in the process. It's a balance, but I've seen it quite a bit where we tend to self-promote or sort of be active in that capacity less, in many cases to our collective detriment.
Yeah, it's funny because it's just repeatedly something that comes up where vets are uncomfortable with that self-promotion piece, and I imagine we're a little bit behind in practice, and so that when we start doing it, it's probably like, you know, a toddler taking his first steps, and there's a lot of missteps and probably going too far to the extreme in self-promotion and then not enough, and then, you know, a trial and error until you find something that's much more authentic and aligned with who we are each individually. And you know, one other thing I'm just aware of as you kind of lay this story out is, you know, I think I approach this dissecting your story thinking of like, oh, you know, you're a general manager, and so how did you proactively get there? But what strikes me is it was just making the right decision at each juncture and kind of going in and getting the most out of the experience. But it wasn't like, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it wasn't like you had this end game plan that I'm going to end up as general manager, more of like making the reasonable decision at each step, and that led you into this role that's highly desirable.
It was. I didn't have a concrete, non-negotiable 5, 7, and 10 year plan really at any stage. I learned early on, certainly at Bain, that retaining some flexibility, and you know, you need to know the types of things that appeal to you. But you know, certainly for me, being too prescriptive about exactly what it was I wanted and exactly when and where it was going to happen, I felt was probably a little bit too much. And so it was, you know, I had always wanted, you know, quote, at some point to find my way into a general manager role or opportunity. I had longer term line of sight to those things at Coca-Cola. And so that was one of the reasons that made Coke a solid choice for me in terms of transitioning out of consulting was that the door to general management was open there, but it certainly was going to be something that would probably take a little bit longer, but I was okay with that. I knew that over the course of a career starting in strategy and then working in capital management and portfolio management, that doors would open, and in some cases, maybe some doors would close. But it was always the types of things I'd wanted to do from a GM standpoint would always be an option. And then, yeah, it was a question of trying to put myself in a position to just, you know, get lucky once or twice, and then reconciling the risk and the opportunity with, you know, this is the shot that I wanted to put myself in a position to have, and then recognizing when it was that shot and being willing to take it.
I love that. And one other thing I wanted to ask about is, having held leadership positions at Bain and Coca-Cola and now Lyft, how have you found that leadership differs outside of the military versus inside the military?
I think one of the key differences, and you don't necessarily feel it right away until you have had, you know, an opportunity or two to lead teams with varied backgrounds, is everyone who's in the military in our generation, all volunteer. We all signed up. We all sort of share the same core values and commitment to the overall mission. And you have that coupled with, quite frankly, a lot of structure, a very rigid organizational hierarchy. Like, there is always a senior person. There's always a senior Marine. And with few exceptions, if you need something done as a leader and you say, you know, we need this done, the answer is, Roger that. You know, we'll get it done. And you have usually great confidence that it will happen. Outside of the military, there is not necessarily, at least in every firm, that level of both commitment to the mission and the cause on the front end, and sort of the rigidity or the expectation that that things get done in the way and the timing that were stipulated. You can't take that for granted. So there were, and you know, the muscle memory formed from, you know, Marine Corps officer candidate school through infantry officer course through, you know, an infantry platoon. You can't just fall back on the assumption that, you know, the same carrots and sticks are going to work. It's more nuanced, and it takes a little bit more, I wouldn't quite call it negotiation, but just a recognition that, you know, sometimes you have to take a harder line, and sometimes you have to make some decisions or create some plans or do some things for your team that wouldn't have been necessary and probably would have seemed very out of place in a military environment.
And the last thing I want to ask, I always like to give room at the end just for anything we didn't cover. And I really appreciate the specificity with which you've talked about general manager and your path there, and a lot of great advice for the audience. I'm wondering, you know, knowing that you have a community of active duty and veterans in general listening, any other advice you'd want to give about life or about jobs or anything that we didn't cover?
Sure. And I guess first and foremost, what I would want to do as a parting shot would be for everyone that is listening, just to say thank you for your service, for your continued service and the service you've given. It is something, you know, obviously that is important to me, and I appreciate it. And you will hear that both while you're wearing a uniform and after. It's something that I certainly want to reiterate. So, I would want to say that first. And then in terms of guidance or advice, I think we talked a little bit about how, veterans can have a tendency to not want to self-promote, or to not want to network or to sort of market themselves. And I think the underlying inclination is totally fine. And frankly, I think, a lot of really successful leaders, still have that general inclination. And I think it's derived from a confidence in your own capability and your own judgment. And my guidance would be, Don't doubt your gut. You know, there you have military personnel, military leaders have been presented with a series of challenges in conditions that are far more intense than that which most of our fellow country members haven't ever seen. And so there is something unique to your experience and the things that are harder to quantify that will serve you in good stead across a lot of capacities. So you know, certainly do your homework, make sure that you continue to challenge yourself intellectually and in terms of the day-to-day challenges you seek. But also recognize that your intuition and the experiences you've collected from your own background are often going to serve you in really good stead. So don't discount them.
This is great, Sam. Well, I appreciate, you know, first your time in sharing your experience, and I know how busy you must be, and so taking an hour to speak with me means a lot. And also just I really appreciate your serving as a role model for a lot of the veterans of someone who has really gone out and achieved well in the civilian workforce and providing a path for others potentially to learn from your example with consulting, with Coca-Cola, with Lyft, and just in general. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Justin. Really enjoyed it.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Before you go, three important announcements. First, if you believe in what I'm doing and believe in supporting veterans in their careers, please, please, please help me spread the word. The best way I know to do that right now is by taking 18 seconds to write a review on iTunes. It would mean a lot. Second, based on my interviews, I'd advise any and all veterans to look at servicetoschool.org and the American Corporate Partners. Both are completely free for veterans and give you a lot of great resources for your education or professional life, respectively. Third, there are a ton of other great interviews, resources, and data at beyondtheuniform.io. Check it out, share it with your friends, and drop me a line if you have any feedback because I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, and see you on the next interview.